From Shobo Genzo, Buddha Nature. You observe cause and effect over time through observation of cause and effect over time. You observe it with a whisk and a staff. However, you may also observe it through the wisdom of desire, the wisdom of beyond desire, original enlightenment, embryonic enlightenment, no enlightenment, or true enlightenment. Intimately observe is not limited to observing, being observed, correct observation, or wrong observation. It is intimately observed. So welcome to Birdland. Nice to sit here with the windows open and hear their songs. Earlier today, I came home after work and called my teacher. And we had a phone doksan, phone conversation. And I told him that among other things, that I was feeling sad. And this arose for causes, from causes and conditions that I couldn't quite identify, but felt that it had something to do with things happening in our larger political world, but also some witnessing of suffering among friends, dear friends. And on seeing these things, I was quite penetrated by them. And I also told him that I was feeling a little bit embarrassed about admitting that I felt sad, which was, of course, another level of suffering that I was feeling at the time. And I found that one of the most important things that I'm able to do in this practice is to be honest with my teacher. To really show up and step forth with whatever is, whatever may be arising in that moment. And of course, that embarrassment had something to do with me thinking that as a Zen practitioner that I am not supposed to feel sad. But it's bigger than that. It's that in this, maybe these times, maybe it's always been true, that in our culture, that sadness, that admitting hard feelings can sometimes feel embarrassing, probably for many of us. We perhaps are taught that our feelings are a sign of weakness, a sign of mistakes in our living, that if we made different choices and if we thought different thoughts, that we would not be sad. And so on some level, perhaps all of us feel a little bit at fault when we feel sad, maybe angry, when we have things arise in us. And of course, my teacher simply received what I said and said, "Me too." Quite a teaching there, quite simple. And very beautiful to just be received, acknowledged, and for him to step forth as well. We went on, and a bit later in the conversation, he asked me, "What is it that you want?" And I thought it was an interesting follow-up desire. We often hear in ascetic practices, practices of self-denial, that we should not feel desire. Here was my teacher asking me, what is it that you want? Was it a trap? Was it a trick question? And I said to him that I wasn't sure in that moment. And I acknowledged to him that that those questions arose for me. How interesting that once again, this little bit of embarrassment around being human arose. Perhaps I'm not supposed to feel any desires. To do so might be an indication that I am quite unenlightened. Of course, to deny our desires and our sadness and our anger and whatever else may arise for us is simply repression. So I kind of sat with the question a little longer until something arose for me. And I shared it with him. And I realized that, interestingly, in sharing this desire, joy arose. Quite surprising, but there was a kind of hole that was there for me. And acknowledging what I wanted created a kind of excitement for me. A kind of excitement about the future. And how interesting that in this practice of Zen, in which we emphasize presence, being with things just as they are, that sometimes being with things just as they are includes desire. So, of course, when we get very attached to our desires and to the outcomes, we may find that that we suffer more. So how is it that we can witness these things in ourselves and not repress them and not dismiss them, act on them when appropriate? Of course, it would be absurd for us not to get hungry when we are hungry. It would be absurd for us not to desire food. So desire arises. It's another part of what it is to be a human being. And our Zen tradition does not encourage us to abandon all desires. That would be a way of cutting ourselves off from simply what naturally arises as a human being. And at the same time, we often hear these teachings that are about like having no preferences, just cast those preferences aside, etc. So it can seem contradictory. And the reason for that is because these teachings are pointing toward emptiness and form. These are ideas that can sound quite separate or opposing to one another. But they aren't really. It's like looking at life from two different perspectives, if you will. But it's still one life. So from the perspective of emptiness, we might say, this moment, just as it is, the bird singing in the tree, so simple and clear. And there is no reason why that would preclude an arising of thought or desire. The world of form, if you will. Now, what can happen to us is that we can kind of overemphasize either side of practice. We can overemphasize the side of practice that is emptiness, in a way, because it's such a sweet relief to simply be with things as they are. And we can also find ourselves living in a place where we overemphasize the world of form, the storied narrative side of life, where I want this, I want that, this is what happened yesterday, let me make something happen tomorrow. And when we live in that place, sometimes we can feel so constricted and tight-chested, and it's almost like the desire takes on a life of its own, and we never really see outside of it. We don't hear the bird song anymore. There's no space. And of course, our practice is to move between these. Very naturally, we open wide to the light year stars and are awakened in their illumination. And just as naturally as we go through our days, we become hyper-focused and narrow. And sometimes that is really necessary for us to do what needs to be done. So there really isn't one fixed point that we land on, but we observe. We can simply observe that this is the nature of what it is to be human. Sometimes just present, open, clear. Sometimes filled with longing or nostalgia or goals, and quite narrow. And through our practice, as Dogen points to, each is a form of enlightenment. Each is a form of what it is to be a human being. Our practice is to be awake, regardless of the form that we may be taking in any given moment. And I think there is some relief that can be found in our recognition that these two views are actually not separate. That actually, when we are perhaps filled with longing and quite narrowly focused, it is still true that the entire universe makes up that narrow focus. That even as I look at a single flower, I can see within it rain clouds and sky and earth and perhaps my own longing. That as I sit on the cushion, as I become aware of constriction and desire and sadness, and perhaps as I share it or confess it, if you will, that almost instantly we can see that there is so much more. That in speaking of what we long for, we may find that there is a presence that we can also awaken to. And that our desire was the gateway to that awakening. So interesting in this conversation, as I was sharing, the wind passed through the trees with that sweet sound of leaves fluttering against one another. The bird sound penetrating our constricted, narrow focus. Always, we are actually utterly permeable. Even when we are deluded and think we are not, the true nature of the self is revealed, not separate. So it's actually fine for us, in our practice even, to go right down into the rabbit hole of confusion or desire or sadness and wake up and look and see what is here now. And we will see the form that desire is taking. Perhaps it's a sense of energy in the chest. Perhaps a constriction and painful. Perhaps joyous and exciting. And in the midst of that, we can notice also that we are breathing. And that the wind is in the trees and the birds are singing. And that a car has passed by in the road. We are vast. And even in the place of great darkness, this is true. And quite reliable. So there is actually nothing for us to fear. Our practice is not about escaping our delusions, if you will. It is about realizing them. About seeing our true nature, our Buddha nature. The Buddha nature in this very moment, what we are in this very moment. And of course, we can't hold on to it. We can't turn it into an idea, put it in a bottle, carry it with us. That great metaphor of taking the spring breeze and putting it in a bottle. It is no longer the spring breeze. It can't be done. So we do it again and again. The practice is to realize our true nature again and again and again. And those things that we think we should not be feeling are precisely the place that we need to pay most attention. Precisely the places where we can awaken. Each of these places, a bell that rings, calling to us, waking us up. What is here now? What is here now? So, one last tiny little bit here. I remember many, many, many years ago when I first started sitting. My first real teacher was James Ford, who is one of the founders of Boundless Way Zen. And I went in and spoke with him. And I had been saying to him different theories week after week for a few months now. And every time he would just say, no. And ring the bell, and I would go away defeated. He somehow knew that I would be back again. And this one time I went into him, and we had a short conversation, and at the end I said, so this is about integration then? And he said, yes. And I think it was the first yes I heard from him. This is not about repression, not about only emptiness. It's about finding what we are in any given moment and seeing that clearly. And that gets to include our heartbreak, and it gets to include our desires and our joys. It gets to include the way we are touched by the world. And it gets to include our vast, true nature. It always includes our vast, true nature. And we have to look again and again and again.